Technology is becoming ever more capable of doing jobs that we once thought could only be performed by humans. Driving cars, unpacking boxes, writing articles, detecting emotions, even analyzing legal documents. For centuries, technological innovation mostly complemented human labor by creating new and better jobs, facilitating higher productivity, and improving standards of living. But now, many fear that technological advancement has reached a point where it will no longer complement many forms of labor, but replace them altogether. In his new book, Humans Are Underrated, Fortune Senior Editor at Large Jeff Colvin argues that despite our growing anxiety of a world where technology puts a majority of people out of work, this bleak future is not inevitable. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Jeff Colvin to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Joe.
The subtitle of the book, What High Achievers Know That Brilliant Machines Never Will. What brought you down this path of wanting to tell that particular story?
Well, a couple of things. One was just observing what was happening with the technology getting so amazingly advanced. I mean, we're used to technology advancing, but we were seeing it doing things that you really never thought, most people anyway, I never thought technology would do, like drive cars, do the work of lawyers, of doctors, increasingly on its own, detecting emotions, understanding emotions better than people do. I mean, this was getting to be stuff that we really never expected, and I'm seeing enormous anxiety about this more than ever before. So I thought this really needed to be thought through.
You talk about in the book that we need to rethink this, that we have to flip our thinking. How so? What do we need to think about differently?
Technology is doing what it has always done when it advances, which is it's revaluing skills. It's making some skills less valuable and other skills more valuable. There's nothing new about that. But what's new is the newly valuable skills, the ones that are going to be economically valuable in the future, are fundamentally different from the kinds of new skills we've needed in the past. Previously, they were always skills you could learn in school. You could get them from a book or in a classroom. The new highly valuable skills are increasingly skills of deep human interaction, empathy, creative problem solving, storytelling. These are things you don't learn in a classroom. They are, you might say, right brain skills, not left brain skills. They are fundamentally different from the kinds of skills that have led people to higher standards of living in the past. But these are the ones we're going to have to be good at now.
Those skills of empathy and social sensitivity and humor and storytelling and just forming relationships and being creative and leadership. Are these, I agree with you, these are certainly things that we want. Are they things that those who are hiring us humans feel that they need?
Yeah, and that's something that's really important. This is not just theory, and I'm not imagining some future when I say this. This is what we're seeing right now. If you look at surveys, for example, of what major employers say they want most now, the list is exactly this. It's ability to brainstorm, to work with others, cultural sensitivity, ability to build relationships. These are from an actual survey of major employers that was done not too long ago. Well, this is exactly what we're talking about. What they're saying is that's what they need.
When it comes to this idea of not asking the right question, of instead of looking at what is it that technology can't do, of what is it that humans can do to succeed in the future, as you said, this is something that's actually happening now. So give us some examples of where this has been very effective.
Oh, well, in a number of places. For example, It's the difference between the high-value worker and the low-value worker in almost any job. And so, for example, I've talked to the people at big companies who hire technology people, you know, the people who write the software, the coders and so forth. Well, you think of these people whose job is to sit in a room and write software, and that's kind of the stereotype of them. what I'm hearing more and more is, actually, somebody who is even a brilliant software writer, but all he can do is sit in a room and write software, is not a high-value worker anymore. What they're telling me is they need software engineers who are empathetic and collaborative, empathetic so that they can understand the experience that the user of that software is going to have, and collaborative so they can work with the other members of the team and come up with creative solutions to these problems they face. In other words, they're saying that even a brilliant software architect who can only do that is not a high-value worker anymore. It's the one who is that plus empathetic and collaborative who is the high-value worker. And we're going to see that across professions. We're seeing it already in the legal profession, even in the medical profession. It's the difference between high value and low.
So you can teach empathy.
Yes, you can. Many people think that it's one of those traits, that, you know, something you're born with or not, you have it or you don't. But the reality is it's a skill. It can be trained, and we are seeing it being trained by a lot of institutions. Probably the one that would surprise people most is the U.S. military, which is actually ahead of any other institution I know in understanding that these new skills are the high-value skills and in training them. So are plenty of other institutions. Some hospitals, the Cleveland Clinic, for example, is doing it. Business schools, Harvard and Stanford Business School are working. You see it more and more. It can be taught.
And not to argue with you, but just to explore the point, because it also means a sense of caring. I mean, that's what empathy is, of caring and caring about the situation and caring about another individual. And I just wonder how much goes into that training to make someone, because you're asking them to take on that task of caring. And I just see in everyday life that can often depend on who they're employed by, what the situation is, what the scenario is, and it sometimes isn't up to the individual person.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, sometimes a person is sort of shackled by the policies of their employer, and in cases like that, I mean, then that employer is probably going to be facing problems because they are probably doing something wrong. And in addition, there's a lot of history that goes into this. And so some people, as with everything else, some people will have a harder time than others. The way a person was brought up may have a lot to do with how well they do at empathy. And in fact, there's a good deal of research on exactly that, and it does have an effect on it. So, some people, as with everything else, some people will be advantaged over others, even though anyone can get better.
You do talk about the irony in the book of at this time when you believe that interpersonal abilities are becoming the key to creating value, we do have this technology which we spend more and more time with. Research shows that it makes us less empathetic, more narcissistic, and less adept at social interaction. So we do have that working against us.
Yeah, we certainly do, and it is one of the great ironies in this whole deal, that the technology that is causing all of this change I'm talking about, that is actually increasing the value of things like empathy, is at the same time causing exactly these skills of human interaction to atrophy, to wither in many people. Because, as you say, there is research showing that the more time we spend looking into a screen, and thus the less time we spend actually interacting with real human beings, the less empathetic we become. And, you know, there's some fairly rigorous testing of this. And so it actually just increases further the value of these skills of deep personal interaction, because while the need for them is increasing, the supply of them is actually decreasing. When demand increases and supply decreases, that's high value.
The title of the book is Humans Are Underrated, and we've discussed why we feel that is the case and how that can become the case. But what happens when the human feels underrated? Not that they are, but they feel underrated.
Well, I mean, that's a real problem, and it probably is arising because someone is in a job that can be done faster, cheaper, and better by technology. And what I have often said to people is, look at your job. If it doesn't require human interaction in some significant way, then that's probably a job that is going away. The day is going to come sooner or later when technology can do it faster, cheaper, and better. And so if you're doing work that doesn't require human interaction in some fairly significant way, it's probably worth trying to find a job that does require it, or find an aspect of your job that does require it, because the world is not going to stand still.
The name of the book, Humans Are Underrated, What High Achievers Know That Brilliant Machines Never Will. The book is published by Portfolio Penguin. Jeff Colvin, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for sharing with us.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book, Humans Are Underrated, by Jeff Colvin. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.